8:20 Congressman Ron Kind will join us in just a moment here, but let's go back to the phones. Good morning, John. You are on the Wisconsin Credit Union Hotline with John and Luke this morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. You know, I've never met John Barnard, and I don't know him. We've built our family here for 22 years, and I've heard various stories of him through the years, but just a few things. I think I've always felt that any time a community can have a headquarters of a company based in that community, you're very blessed.
Yes.
There's so many good-paying jobs that come from that. I just want to thank Mr. Barnard for his donation of his tennis center. You know, because there's a lot of things that go into making up the quality of the life in a community. And this donation, this first-class tennis center, you know, is a piece of that. And I think Mr. Barnard does a lot more for this community than we all realize. But I just personally, I don't know, who knows if he's listening, but I just wanted to thank him for his generosity to help with this donation to continue to build our community.
I have been told through various parties off and on that occasionally Mr. Barnard does get an opportunity to listen to this program, and so I'm sure he will appreciate those comments, and thank you so much for calling. 105.1 WYY with Luke Anthony and Bob Bozold will be back with us. Congressman Ron Kind going to join us in just a moment here. Let's take another couple of calls because I know we're probably going to switch gears with the congressman. I know we're going to talk Dairy Act and a few other things. Of course, we'll recap the partisan primary and all that sort of thing. Good morning. Hi, you're on 105.1 WYY.
Hey, good morning. Just kind of a comment as a prelude to Congressman Kind's interview. And if there's one thing that the left and right could probably agree on, if you put them in a room, they'd both probably say, you know what, you're right. We do need term limits. There are too many incumbents that hang around too long in Washington, and their track records pretty much show that things don't change down there. Now, I know when you ask the congressman or any other long-term incumbent, they're going to say, we do have term limits. They're called elections.
Right.
But I think if you look at the results of yesterday's elections, you see how hard it is for a quote-unquote Washington outsider to break into the system. If you look at Congressman Ryan's election,
yes.
Congressman Ryan's election, and I think even though he's not an incumbent, I think it's fairly safe to call Russ Feingold a Washington insider. So,
believe it or not, we actually have Congressman Kind right
perfect
here.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Good morning,
he just
guys.
He just walked in the door.
Good morning.
So I thought that's great. And you're going back for your 10th term.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And so I'd like to get your take on that. Beyond the standard answer, which is you know, well, we have elections and that's supposed to change things there.
Right.
But this has really got a lot more to do with the way things are districted and everything else, doesn't it?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm very grateful for the support and the vote of confidence and trust that people have shown in me yet again yesterday, you know, and I think it's because of the work that I do back home. You see me, Murph. I'm around all the time. I'm listening to people. I'm available. I take ideas from Wisconsin and try to inject them out in Washington. I think people see what type of representative I've been, and they like what they see, quite frankly. They've seen me grow up here. This is my home area, raising my family here. I have a pretty good sense of what the hopes and aspirations and the challenges are of this district. And then people have a voice come election time. And quite frankly, there has been a lot of term limits, quote unquote. We have a majority in the House of Representatives now who have served less than 6 years. We have a majority of the U.S. Senate that are in their first term. Has things really improved with that influx of new people that have come to Washington? I would submit no. In fact, it's gotten worse in a lot of ways because so many of my colleagues now come to their job with this my way or no way at all attitude. And it's very dysfunctional. It's hyperpartisan. It's very polarized. And it's hard to get anything done. And people know that just hasn't been a part of my DNA. I know people in my own party would like me to be screaming at my Republican colleagues and pounding the table. That's not a way to get things done. And I think, you know, because of that, I think I reflect this district pretty well. Then they want someone with some common sense that's going to take Wisconsin values with them to Washington and try to get things done. And that's the way I've operated my whole time.
Your colleague on the Senate side, Tammy Baldwin, would say that much of what goes into the legislative work is, frankly, an endurance test.
Yeah.
It's really
right.
Tedious. It's behind the scenes. It's taking a lot of phone calls, yeah. Racking up numbers. Your operatives would obviously report the same thing, that, you know, they spend most of their life trying to get a vote to swing in a particular bill or something you're trying to bring forward.
It's true. And, you know, I'm especially proud. A recent survey came out of Congress that showed that I was the 11th most bipartisan member of Congress, 11 out of 435. It may not be number one, but I think that's what the people back home want to see in their representative, someone who's going to listen, who's going to try to find some common ground, not be afraid to reach across the aisle. Of course, when you do that, you do incur some wrath from people within your own party. I mean, and again, that's why I probably had a primary challenge, is because people saw me trying to get things done in a bipartisan way. And some people in both parties don't want that. They just want the bomb throwers. But to your point, Murph, you know, democracy's hard. Consensus building is really hard, incredibly frustrating. But I've always approached it the way I have within my own family. If I came home one night and said to my wife, Tawny, dear, I've got this great new idea on how decisions are going to be made in this house. It's going to be my way or no way at all. She'd throw me up in my ears. It's just that simple. Mm-hmm. So why do so many people, when they get into office, think it's got to be their way or no way at all, without any element of cooperation or bipartisanship? It's the only way you get things done.
Looking at your colleague on the Republican side, Paul Ryan, and much to do was made about this challenge and everything else. And yet, when it really came down to it, he won overwhelmingly. He's very popular and very, you know, people, I believe, probably are saying to him, his constituents, you're doing a good job. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, and but I also agree, you know, with you, and I'm not sure what the previous caller was highlighting that, but we do have a problem when it comes to drawing the political map. I've always been in favor. In fact, I'm on federal legislation that calls for nonpartisan commissions to draw the political map. I think we need more competitive districts. We need more swing districts. That hopefully then would make bipartisanship a little bit easier rather than overwhelmingly Republican or Democratic districts, which has been the trend throughout the country. I also believe we need to get the dark money out of the political system. Citizens United, all these super PACs right now, you don't know where that money's coming from or what the motivation is behind those powerful special interests. At the least, they should be completely transparent so the American people can decide for themselves what the motivation is.
And to be completely genuine, even if some of those organizations have helped you. You're even saying that, even knowing that
sometimes they
can assist you.
I've never had an independent group come in on my behalf. Okay. I've had them come in against me. You know, back in 2010, I had over $3 million of super PAC money that came in to attack me and try to take me out. And I withstood that assault. But I've never had any independent group come in on my behalf. But I think it's a problem. And it's a problem that both sides have to recognize, because we're waiting for a major scandal or corruption to take place with all this money in the political system. And again, at a minimum, it should all be completely disclosed and transparent so the American people can be the judge and referee in all this.
On the subject of redistricting and the way the districts are currently drawn, I'm sure the way the 3rd district was drawn, to a degree, I know this is the 3rd election with it, since the recent redrawing, probably led to no Republican challenger, and now we've passed the primary. This is the first time since the 1940s that the 3rd Congressional District is not going to have a Republican-Democratic race, you know, barring some unforeseen write-in challenger, but that's realistically not going to be a challenge. So how do you approach the next few months of the fall campaign, knowing that more or less this is locked up? What do you do in a political sense? How are you campaigning?
Well, first of all, I don't want to give too much information to my political opponents, but the 3rd Congressional District that I represent didn't change that dramatically after redistricting. It improved by 1% Democratic performance. Everyone now has this belief that it's overwhelmingly Democratic. It's not. It's still a very swing district. But I'm going to do what I've always done. You look at the day after the primary. Here I am in Eau Claire all day, set of meetings, listening sessions, going to be having lunch with the chamber to get feedback from the business community as well. And that's my job. And so I'm going to continue to perform that job, because we still have a lot of work to do in Washington this year before the end of the year expires. So I'm going to continue to do that. And that might have something to do with why I'm not facing a Republican challenger, because of the job I'm doing and the vote of confidence and trust that I've gotten from people back home here.
I know you have questions. Bob's got some questions. We do want to talk Dairy Act at some point here. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back in just a moment on 105.1 WYY. Congressman Ron Kind with us here. More coming up. And good morning. This is 105.1 WYY. Tomorrow morning, we will be live from Chilson Subaru for our annual back-to-school Bucks and Books Drive, 6 to 10 a.m. We'll have lots of auction items, and you can drop by with donations and drop books off all throughout the month. In fact, we're going to be taking book donations and, well, other donations for back-to-school supplies. We'll be taking those at the Chilson family of dealerships in Canton and Halley, and, of course, Chilson Subaru will be there tomorrow. Sam is with us now on the phones. Good morning. You're on the Wisconsin Credit Union Hotline. You're on with Congressman Ron Kind.
Morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Congressman Kind.
Yes.
You voted for the Obama Health Care Act.
That's right.
Okay, my premiums have increased $900 a month, and I lost my doctor.
I'm sorry to hear that. Are you in the individual market, Sam?
Yep.
Yeah, we still got a problem with the individual market. It's just not competitive enough, and we've got to stay focused on price, the cost of health care. I still think there's so much more we need to do to bring that price down so it's more affordable for all of us. It's crucial because...
I should say one thing on that. If for such a major piece of legislation and not one member of the other party voted for it, that's not right, Congress.
Well, I know this got caught up in a political vortex at the time. It was unfortunate because there were a lot of Republican ideas went into that legislation too. And basically, we've got a private health insurance marketplace now, which was very much a Republican idea in the creation of these exchanges. But I've been focused on price containment. I've been focused on changing the way we pay for healthcare so it's more value, quality, outcome-based rather than the fee-for-service system, which basically pays based on the number of services and tests that are done regardless of results. And that's what's been bankrupting us for too long.
I think you should focus much harder on it, Congress.
Yeah, we're trying to. You're right. This impacts all of us, and we've got to continue to work on it, especially with the aging population. And when you get older, you consume more health care, and therefore it's going to be driving these budgets more and more. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, and it's again. I'm guessing you can't do it alone, right? You need not just other Democrats focusing on this. You need some Republicans focusing on this too, right?
Absolutely. And I'm on the committee. I'm on Ways and Means. I'm on the Health Subcommittee. And there's been more bipartisan work in the last year, couple of years or so, because we're all in this together. We're Americans. We're all impacted by the health care system. We want a good health care system. We want an affordable one that it doesn't bankrupt us, either our family budgets or business or public budgets. But here's the thing, this is, it's an evolution, it's a process. Just because the Affordable Care Act passed doesn't mean we've all stopped thinking about ways of improving the healthcare system. We need to continue to learn what's working and what isn't working, and then have the wisdom to make changes along the way. And you can better do that in a bipartisan way.
I'm going to go with a couple assumptions here, which is a dangerous thing to do in early August, but considering where the political climate is now, what a lot of people are prognosticating, let's presume a Clinton victory this November, and there's some people already starting to say, well, the Democrats could take the House. I'm personally skeptical on that, the way that everything is drawn, Let's go with that scenario. If, and under that scenario, the Democrats would be taking the Senate. That's political dynamics. Yeah. If the Democrats had full control, you have a President Hillary Clinton, you have a Democratic-controlled House and a Democratic-controlled Senate, but not to 60 like in 2009, 2010, what changes do you think could be made to the Affordable Care Act?
Well, two things off the top of my head. One is we're going to continue to push for delivery system reforms. We have a more integrated, coordinated, patient-centered delivery system. There's bipartisan support for doing it. In fact, our healthcare providers in this area are showing us those type of models of care that do work and get great results. Secondly, there's not much pushback on the idea of changing the reimbursement system so it is value or outcome-based. And there are a lot of that taking place right now. In fact, 40% of Medicare payments today is value-based payments, no longer fee-for-service. That's a revolutionary change in how healthcare is paid for in this country. I think that's the key to really driving costs down. If we're going to tell our healthcare providers that you're going to get paid no longer on what you do, but how well you do it, that's going to spur a lot of innovation, a lot of change. And they're going to start hitting those marks more efficiently and more cost-effectively, and we're going to get better outcomes as a consequence. So we're already pushing on that pedal very aggressively right now, 40% of Medicare, and now we're starting to see more of that in the private insurance market too. So these are things working in parallel with one another. But again, this is going to be an education evolutionary process, learning what's working, what isn't, and then having the ability to come together to make changes to it.
It's part of the gorilla in the room, though, that we've so connected health care with health care insurance or Medicare or other, that until we separate One blames the other. I mean, we've got a lot of that going on. The insurance agency saying, well, costs are too high at healthcare, and healthcare providers, and we live in a healthcare town, healthcare providers are bouncing back and saying, come take a look at our books. We're not making a pile of money off this stuff. We've got some issues. We've got some problems. We're not getting paid.
They say their margin is low, but there are a couple more things. You talk about what else we should be doing. We need more transparency and pricing in the healthcare system so that we can act more as consumers and what type of services we are getting. And it's just been an opaque, dark system. And then the billing process, too, is so convoluted. It's 19th century, and we've got to update that as well so there's more accountability but also more efficiency. But the truth is, guys, we can try to make all these changes within the healthcare system by reforming health insurance companies, reforming the delivery system, reforming the payment system, but we've got to start acting more healthy ourselves. That means eating better, exercising more, staying away from the cigarettes and the drugs, and try to change the culture so that we make the healthy choice the easy choice for people. And the key battleground, I think, there is with our children, making sure they're physically active, making sure they're getting a good diet, making sure they're staying off from cigarettes and the stuff that can really impact their long-term health needs. And that's when you're really going to start seeing an evolutionary change in the healthcare system. We've become too accustomed of just getting sick, expecting these doctors to perform miracles or taking a magical pill to solve all our problems. But there's a certain element of personal responsibility that we have to take in this as well.
With the insurance piece of this, I would describe it much like health insurance. One of the biggest issues we have is that pretend you're going on a date, okay? And if I'm going on a date and my lovely wife has taken me on a beautiful date and I know I don't have to pay for it directly, I don't know what the cost even is. I don't even look at the menu. I order lobster all the time. I go right with it. Why wouldn't I? That's, I think, one of the issues we have is the fact that we're in a scenario where when was the last time, and I'm going to be going to a doctor later today, when was the last time you were bold enough to say, by the way, that procedure that you're talking about, this visit, how much am I paying for this day? How much am I paying? How much is my insurance company paying for this, not just writing it off and saying, well, what the heck? My insurance paying for it, so what do I care? If it's a $2,400 procedure, go ahead.
You know? It gets back to the transparency aspect and getting us the information we need to make good choices with it. And I'm still astounded that even in the doctor's room, that oftentimes you raise the issue, they have no idea how much this stuff costs and that. So how can you get instant feedback?
I've actually had the doctor say that to me. A particular prescription drug, can we find a generic for that? Because I don't even know what this thing costs, you know, how much the cost. And of course, a lot of times I'll tell, with my insurance, it's really not all that expensive.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not considering, a copay of $20 might look pretty cheap.
Well, you mentioned the generic market, and another area that Congress is going to have to pay more attention to is the rising drug costs.
Right.
I mean, that is going through the ceiling right now, and part of it's lack of competition in that. Part of it is the generic market not working that well. But that's really been the big cost driver that we're seeing out there. And the Affordable Care Act didn't do, I think, an adequate job of really introducing competition in the drug market.
Yeah, and yet we have to fund innovation, too. And how are you going to do that? You know, what drug company is going to be out there that's going to spend millions and billions of dollars developing something only to have it fail in the marketplace?
Yeah. And we need better metrics. We need better measurements of whether these drugs even work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so easy to prescribe, and they're very expensive, and people are taking it, but we're not getting the type of data back to know whether it even makes sense to be spending so much money on this miracle drug when you may not be getting the results you want.
I know flossing was the miracle procedure, and now they say, it doesn't do that much good. I'm still flossing anyway. It's just good measure.
I got a pretty smile, Murph.
Yes, exactly. I'll still continue to do that. With more in just a moment. We'll get to your calls on the Wisconsin Credit Union Hotline here on 105.1 WYYY. 8:51, Congressman Ron Kind is with us. We'll post this for you at WYYYradio.com, and this may also be on part of our Newsmakers program this weekend on our stations here. Let's catch up with Karen this morning. Good morning, Karen. You're on WYYY.
Yeah, good morning, Representative Kind.
Good morning.
What I'd like to speak to you about is this extortion of people's money.
Mm.
And I would like to ask Congress to vote for everyone that had money taken out of their paycheck. Now, I met several people even this week, and one lady, and I kind of like the way she put it, they're working hard, and they're poor, and then they penalize them because they're poor. They take this money. out of their paycheck. She said it three times. They're working, and they're working hard. And then the IRS took $695 out of their paycheck, and she kept saying, they're poor, and they penalize them.
Well, Karen,
I would like to call on Congress. All this money that was taken and extorted from these workers by the IRS, and possibly they didn't even have that money there to take it out for their return.
Karen, let me just say...
I want that ended. I want it ended, and I want it totally refunded to all these people.
I think Congressman Kine might have something to say.
Karen, if you have a friend in that situation, and this is true for any listener out there, mm-hmm. if they feel like the IRS is dipping into their paycheck and doing something wrong or improper, get in touch with my office right away so we can start making inquiries and we can look into this and make sure that that's not, in fact, happening. I'm not familiar with the facts and circumstances around the case that you're describing, but I encourage people, if they feel that they're not being treated right, whether it's the IRS or any other federal agency, get in touch with me because that's part of our job. Mark Allman, who's in the Eau Claire office, is sitting next to me right now. He does a lot of this casework in that. So people shouldn't, and a lot of people don't know that that's part of the a federal representative's job is to represent their interests, especially going up against a federal agency or program.
Yeah, that's what you spend, you and your operatives, your office
right.
staff, spend a lot of time doing. Karen, thanks for the call. We appreciate that. It's 8:53. Let's take another call. Daisy's with us. Good morning, Daisy.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you addressed the huge elephant in the closet, or in the middle of the room. I'm sorry, it's not even in the closet.
No, it's out of the closet.
Yeah, and that is the medication costs, the cost of prescription drugs,
right.
and generics, too, are quadrupling. In addition, as you say that it's the aging population, you know, that it's, you know, a lot of the healthcare costs are attributed to, and then you're going to utilize outcome basis for seniors to pay physicians for seniors that have chronic conditions, you know, so they're not going to have good outcome basis. So then that is, you know, you're going to establish outcome basis, you're going to establish how these medications affect, you know, are they worthwhile or can you see effects from them? I think you guys are going down the wrong path here because I think physicians, you know, went to school for this. And I understand that you're trying to respond to all of the complaints about this, you know, how, you know, but I know that you haven't had a chance to work on it. But I really think you can't, you know, I have a concern about this because I've heard physicians, you know, who have been throwing up their arms, you know, say, hey, you know, how do you have an outcome-based positive
because they realize they're up against it going into it.
During their daily lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Daisy, let me just say that. That's exactly the population that we need better outcomes for because 20% of the population consumes over 80% of the healthcare costs, and it's because of chronic disease management. And we have shown protocols of care, best evidence medicine, that can improve the conditions of those patients so that they're not in the hospital all the time and that they're not sick as much as they were in the past. So that especially has been the real hard aspect of healthcare reform is how do you get at that unique population that has chronic diseases and requires a more coordinated care system so we get better outcomes at a much better price because that's really what's been driving the cost. And then those costs do get shifted onto healthier people. That's how the insurance market ultimately works. But that especially, it's the biggest challenge, I think, you're right, but it's also the most important that we continue to work to improve outcomes for those patients.
When I was 22 years old, I didn't think I needed insurance. Even when I was 32, I never imagined that I would be at this point where I'm like, well, yeah, now kind of need it. We're kind of reaping what we sow, and that's not an indictment on individuals in America. That's an indictment on America, that societally we are reaping what we sow here. Some of these things are coming due. We got to pay the marker now.
Yeah.
With a lot of these cases.
And it's tough to convince those young invincibles that they also need health care coverage in their lives. Because, listen, we're all one accident or one major
right.
illness away from financial ruin if we don't have health care coverage in our lives.
Let's take another call here. Gary, good morning, Gary. You're on the Wisconsin Credit Union Hotline.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Kind, I'm not a fan. Politics.
That's okay. As long as you're a Packer fan, we're okay.
Citizens Against Government Waste, I mean, you got an F. You vote for Obama stuff, what, 94, 97% of the time, and we know that that's not good policy for what's coming down the pike. And you're, these experiments that you're doing with the healthcare system, and you mention, well, you know, we pushed it through, and now we've got to work all these problems through. Those problems should have been dealt with before and not use my insurance or my health care as an experiment for you guys. Because that's what we're doing now is we pass it, and now we're going to work on it. That's called an experiment. That's not called legislation. So I think you guys have got this backwards. You went at it the wrong way, and the Republicans did not put stuff in there because of how screwed up this bill was. Democrats have to eat this by themselves.
Well, Gary, let me just respond by saying that the healthcare system wasn't in that great a shape before the Affordable Care Act was passed. It was taking us to a very bad place with more uninsured, with the cost of healthcare rising exponentially, budget deficits being driven because of healthcare costs, and us being less competitive globally because of the healthcare system and where it was. So to believe that everything was honky-dory and fine before passage of the Affordable Care Act, that's the reason why many of us believed that we had to take a run at this. And I have never pretended like this was the perfect response to all the problems out there. I've appreciated the complexity of the healthcare system, how hard it is to reform something that's been in existence for a long time. But if we can get constructive feedback, constructive criticism back with the idea of trying to improve it, I'm all ears. But if you just want to call in and just complain, there's not much I can do with that.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Good morning, Bob. We got about a minute or so to go here, so we're obviously not going to get to the Dairy Act. We'll let Bob Bosel get to that.
Okay.
Sorry, but thanks for being
patient. Yeah, the Dairy Action Plan. Our dairy farmers are getting pounded right now.
They are.
Low milk prices.
Yeah.
And,
so yeah. We'll get to that at a later time. But
sure.
Go ahead, Bob. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to thank Representative Ron Kind for explaining to the public that Obamacare was really based a lot upon Republican ideals, and yet all of a sudden, after the Democrats implement it, you have senators like Ron Johnson that have voted approximately, 60 times to repeal Obamacare, knowing full well the president wouldn't sign that bill anyway. And also, you know, I see a lot of what I think, I'm kind of a cynic, but I feel like there's price fixing or collusion among the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies as they make these huge profits and can get away with it. And also, is there any transparency with hospitals? I mean, they are a tax-free organization. Do we really know if they're being efficient with their spending?
Bob, the quickest way to get rich in this country is to develop a monopoly and no competition with what you're offering. And we need to be careful of that, whether it's our healthcare providers, the health insurance market, the pharmaceutical industry, to make sure that they don't develop monopolistic tendencies that prey upon us consumers.
Congressman Ron Kind, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
105.1 WYYY.